and to also answer difficult questions still besetting us, the government. Because we all know that.
Parked in the policy direction section, section 3. Therefore, the ball's in your court, please to use those constraints and checks and balances. But she will be issuing policy directives on the strategic infrastructure intervention for public entities. Now, with that coming up soon, in the form of InfraCo, but in future in other forms, I want to ask you about vans. I took note that in the annual report, 81 had been licensed, okay, fine, by end of financial year. But in the set of policy directives given 25 May, there was a section on increasing competition through conversion of vans licenses. And I would like you to help me to understand what the section means in the first place, and then just to ask you what progress, if any. I think there is a verb missing in this whole set of policy direction or something. But ICASA must urgently consider whether none or only certain of the existing vans licensees can be authorized to provide services and work. And for the purposes of immediate implementation, because this is a layer where infrastructure network competition could long ago have occurred. I don't have to tell you. It has not been for various delays. You are supposed to prescribe and ensure that those who already have, I don't want to read the whole lot, Chairman, I'm sure ICASA is familiar with it, but especially where there are applicants who will have a significant socioeconomic target, you're supposed to do something, but the verb is missing. And I would just like to understand what the current state of play is with the licensing of vans who want to build networks or have been converted licenses, please.
Thank you, Wendy. Citizen questions us as a consumer. Consumer of one of the licensees called SABC, we do all of that, and yet there's no practical plan. I'm not sure whether ICASA requires from the broadcaster to roll out more services to cover, to enlarge the footprint. We're giving them two extra licenses, 4 and 5, but based on the same size. Do you think it's fair on me as a consumer to pay equal license, and yet I don't receive all the benefits from it? And in some areas, they don't pick up certain signals, and that's all of that. And those seem to be, because when you talk to SABC, they speak a language not covered by the 11 languages, means that you don't understand what they are saying. Now I'm talking to people that issue them a license under certain conditions. They promised me before 94, it will come. Can
a specific grouping in South Africa not say, because before 1913 there was also people with other rights. Have the rights of those people been included in this bill? I'm referring to what some people refer to as Khoisan or Khoi Khoi or whatever, which I do not agree with the name, but is it included in this?
Honorable members, I'm not sure what I will discuss it, if I may be humble. Request your good self to be patient enough to get the presentation. At a point where we have received that, there will be clarifying questions, and I will note all the issues that we need to discuss when we go line by line in relation with the bill. Maybe what I should have done before I can even allow the minister to present, I should have given you the framework. I thought I would give you the framework on how we are going to go about the bill after we have received the presentation. If you can, I beg for your indulgence, Honourable Minister, to allow me to give the framework.
Khadija, I don't know what is happening with my footprint. But okay. Actually, this is a proposed framework, which I thought, when I said we'll deal with house issues later, we're going to adopt. So, given the fact that we are already discussing in this manner, I don't have a choice but to present the draft framework to yourselves now before we get the presentation. First, as the bill is being tabled to us today officially in this meeting, as we all know, we'll have to run adverts to get input from the public. That's the process that will follow immediately after this presentation. Therefore, I will publicize the bill so that everybody knows that this bill is before us, and we'll have it publicized in radio stations, in newspapers, and so on. And
because it's a section 75B, if I'm correct, Mr. Enver, therefore it gives us more powers as the National Assembly to deal with it, but we will consult with our colleagues in the NCOP and in provinces to get their input. And we will then consolidate the submissions, which I will come back to you to give you the order and the priority of the submissions received. We will then visit provinces to conduct public hearings, and we will also conduct other hearings here in the chamber. And then we will start with the formal presentation of and the discussions, clause by clause, line by line, where honourable members will have an opportunity to make their input and to check whether the language used legally and otherwise is correct in the bill. And therefore, we will then move for the adoption of the bill, and which will lead to the debate. And finally, we'll expect the NCOP to deal with it with its concurrent responsibilities, of which it will be sent to the President for ascension. That will be the framework that we'll operate under, so the program will follow later. So I do not know whether having given this framework, honorable members, do we still want to further engage before the presentation of the bill? May I have any indication? Thank you very much. Honourable Minister, the time is up.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think the start of the discussion does indicate to us that this will be indeed a very lively debate going forward during this period. I'm sure we've been missing such discussion in the committee. But firstly, I would like to thank the chairperson and the portfolio committee, knowing that this is their recess, that they've allowed us to make a formal presentation to the committee on this legislation, which now has gone through cabinet. We've worked with the state law advisor's office and is now before you, and it would allow you then as lawmakers to engage, solicit the public views, improve on what we've done, and be able to continuously engage until you make it as law. So we'd like to thank the members for having taken a day out of their recess to be here in Parliament. I'd also like to thank my colleagues in Parliament, Jeff Dutoit being here, Deputy Minister of Land Affairs, who has worked with us on this legislation, but also other members of the Cabinet. I'd also like to thank the State Law Advisor's Office, particularly Mr. Hoon, who have worked with us very close after the process had gone through Cabinet to ensure that it's ready for the presentation here. And also those stakeholders who participated in our workshops to improve on the initial policy document and enable us to draft this legislation that is before you. It is important for me that before we go into the detail, we actually outline the background, the processes that were followed before we came to you. But firstly, it's important for me to indicate that this has been a matter that has been raised particularly by a number of stakeholders, some of whom are within government, that the current Expropriation Act of 1975, as amended that we have, has actually been inconsistent with the requirements of our current constitution and therefore requires amendment. But also there has been a recognition that if you look at the Municipal Structures Act of local government, it gives certain powers for expropriation to municipalities. There are certain bylaws even that predate the Municipal Structures Act that gave such powers to municipalities to expropriate and other bodies. So there was an acknowledgement that we need an alignment, a framework act that would allow expropriation bodies to use similar process for expropriation. It was also acknowledged that if one looks at the property clause as it is indicated in Section 25, indeed for land reform purposes in the public interest, that clause itself acknowledges one of the mechanisms that the state can use is compulsory acquisition, which is actually expropriation. So all those factors necessitated that we re-looked at the current act and therefore make the necessary amendments, which we have now done. We went to Cabinet on the 16th of May 2007 to present a broad framework for the legislation. cabinet advised us that we need to work on a policy discussion document that would allow various stakeholders to input on that process, which could then guide our draft legislation. We gazetted that policy document in November, and it went out for public comment. We received written submissions from a variety of stakeholders. Close to 100 submissions were received until January 2008. We then had two workshops. The first workshop really dealt with the public sector. As I said, that there has been a lot of alignment also required at that level, so we brought in the three spheres of government as well as public entities for the first discussion of the document. Then we followed with a broad workshop for the general public, which included farmers' organizations, property organizations, political parties, as well as community-based organizations. It was an open process, and one would like to thank those who participated and the input they've given. It enabled us to draft this bill, which we then tabled to Cabinet for approval on the 5th this year of March 2008. So this draft is the one that we've worked on with the State Law Advisor's Office to ensure that it is in line with the Constitution, that indeed there are no ambiguities in the interpretation of the legislation, that it can be a legislation that will stand the test of time. If one were to say what are the objects of the bill, the chairperson has outlined briefly some of those, but in reality the bill seeks to align the Expropriation Act with the Constitution and to provide a common framework to guide the processes and procedure for expropriation of property by organs of state, by among others providing for the extension of the purpose for which property may be expropriated from the narrow term of public purpose to include expropriation in public interest, as it is said in Section 25 of our Constitution. Expropriation in the public interest, for instance, as it is outlined there, provides government with a tool to achieve its commitment for land reform and to reform of other equitable natural resources that the country has. It also provides for all affected parties to be notified of a contemplated expropriation, to afford such parties an opportunity to raise objections and make representation to the expropriating authority before a decision to expropriate is taken. The expropriating authority must give consideration to all submissions and must attempt to reach an agreement with persons whose rights and interests may be adversely affected before deciding to expropriate. The other objective that is provided for in this legislation is that an expropriation authority may, on reasonable ground and justifiable so, depart from prescribed procedures, for instance, when an expropriation has to be affected as a matter of agency. The expansion of the scope of protected rights to provide for compensation for both registered and unregistered rights, particularly those people who are labor tenants on farm or farm workers. As we know, some of the challenges that still exist, that those people, in most instances, have never been considered for compensation when expropriation is undertaken, where their rights would be impacted upon. In terms of Expropriation Act, only the holders of registered rights and certain unregistered rights are eligible for compensation upon expropriation. So, just in brief, those are the objectives that we are trying to provide for within this legislation. If one therefore look at the structure of the bill as you will go through, honourable members, we're looking, there is the preamble that sets out the purpose of this legislation. We also go into the definition which would allow us to, define in the same way what we claim. It also grants powers to expropriate to the minister, as well as on whose behalf can the minister expropriate, for instance, on behalf of juristic persons, which may be public entities, on behalf of the state, as well as on behalf of individuals. It also indicates what powers and to whom can the minister delegate for purposes of expropriation, as well as the procedures that will be undertaken, such as investigation and valuation of property. Those are included in the legislation, but also it indicates how the decision will be arrived at for expropriation, and then deal also with the detailed procedures such as the notice for expropriation, the vesting of property when such expropriation notices have been served, as well as the consequences of expropriation for unregistered rights, as I've said, particularly as it relates to compensation, and also how compensation will be determined, as well as provide for an institution that can advise the minister in taking this decision, such as the Expropriation Advisory Board, as well as the role of the court where there may be such dispute and the need for review, as well as looking at when there is a need for withdrawing a compensation, how that would be done, as well as what impact this legislation will have on others and therefore the repeal or the alignment of those. In the preamble in the bill, we'll just highlight what are those issues that we're looking at. We're looking at the values of the Constitution. We're also looking at issues of social justice as it is indicated in the property clause. We also look at the right of the state to expropriate in the public interest and for public purposes subject to payment of just and equitable compensation. You'd see that Section 25 of our Constitution, where it deals with the need for the state to expropriate, that it includes some of the elements such as just and equitable. So we've tried working with the state law advisors to ensure how that could be done. We look at the powers of the minister, as I said earlier, that the minister can expropriate on behalf of the state, on behalf of individuals, as well as on behalf of juristic persons. With regard to the processes that will be undertaken, one of those was saying there would be a need for investigation before expropriation is undertaken. One of those would be looking at whether in the property that will be so expropriated, are there unregistered rights, apart from those, obviously, of the registered property owner. We'll also look at what the impact of the expropriation on future plans, including town planning, and therefore closer working relationship with local government. We'll also look at, as we said earlier, an advisory board which will operate at regional and as well as national level to advise expropriating authorities on all aspects of expropriation. The minister also, in terms of the process of investigation, working with the board, can actually ask the board to furnish relevant information that will be necessary for such expropriation, such as what unregistered rights, as I've said earlier, but also the history of the property, as you would see in Section 25, 3 of the Constitution, A, B, going to D, looking at the state investment, looking at whether, in terms of the current use, what is this land used for, look at what is the market value, as well as the suitability of the property for expropriating purposes. So we said those steps will be important prior to serving a notice as the state undertakes expropriation, that those investigations need to be done. We're also saying in the legislation, as you will see, minister can delegate powers for expropriation to the level from DG to DDG, not below. But we're saying while we allow for those delegations, powers to withdraw an expropriation may not be delegated. The minister will have to do that. On Section 11 of the bill, we deal with the issues of how decisions will be taken. We're saying in undertaking this process, there has to be publication of the notice as well as serving that notice to the affected party. And that this notice also needs to be served to the Regional Land Claims Commission as well as the municipality. We're saying Regional Land Claims Commission because, as you know, that we are currently undertaking the land reform process and the restitution cases in particular, and therefore some of the land that needs expropriation might actually have an impact on the way work of the restitution or land restitution, as well as the work of the regional land claims commissioner. We are also saying it is important to serve the notice to the municipality for purposes of information for the municipality to know, to also understand whether or not some of the proposed action might have an impact on the development plans of the municipality, but also for the municipalities to appraise us where there may be rates that are being owed in the current property. We're saying when this notice is served, it must contain the notice that the property will be expropriated, which means which property, the amount, proposed amount that will be offered as compensation, as well as an opportunity to make presentations within 21 days of receiving the notice. We are also saying, with regard to negotiation and agent expropriations where such would be required, on representation or on receipt of representation, attempts to reach agreement with the owner of the property and holders of unregistered right will be sought. Where there might be a need for agent expropriation by the minister, where it is reasonable and justifiable in the view of the authority, as well as acting on the advice of the board, that would be permitted by the legislation. We're saying, with regard to this board that we're proposing, its role, let me say firstly, the board will consist of chairperson, deputy chair, as well as other members that may be determined by the minister with relevant expertise. That the board will also have a secretariat, which will be accountable to the department, as you know, that in terms of the PFMA, such will have to happen. That the department would actually maintain a register of all expropriation and other contemplated finalization of such expropriation or where such expropriation may be withdrawn. And that actually this board will advise the minister on all the necessary expropriation procedures that ought to be followed, as well as assisting the minister on the investigation prior to such expropriation. We're also saying such a notice, while it will be served to the municipality, as well as it being served to the regional land claims commissioner, it must also be served to the registrar of deeds for information, so that the deeds office can also know that such an expropriation on this property is being contemplated. Well, obviously, to an owner and a holder of unregistered rights, they would also need to receive that notice of expropriation. We're saying once such notice has been given, the property will vest on the state as follows. Where there is a mortgage property, when the owner is released from the mortgage or other property on an agreed date or on the date in which the notice has been served. We are saying, as I indicated earlier, that we do have, if you look at the Labor Tenants Act, it indicates that people who have stayed in a property for more than 10 years, they actually have the rights on the land. They may not be registered, but they do have the rights in terms of one of our legislation. Similarly, with the extension of Security of Tenure Act, people who have stayed in the farm for more than 10 years, they do have the right on those areas, albeit they are not registered. And therefore, it is for that reason that in our proposal in this legislation, we are saying those people whose rights, they may be informal, which will be affected by an expropriation act, they are entitled to compensation. And therefore, that notice, as I said earlier, must be sent to them as well, and that they must be offered compensation when this expropriation is undertaken. We then look at the vexing question which has been raised, or which has been a question of interest by a number of parties, is the determination or the basis of the determination of compensation. We're saying compensation will be decided by the expropriating authority on the basis of the advice by the expropriating advisory board. That such determination must be just and equitable and reflect an equitable balance between the interests of those affected as well as the public interest. While saying all factors as they are included in Section 25(3) need to be undertaken when such consideration of compensation is undertaken. And we want to indicate here that market value alone will not be the preferred, given preference as opposed to other elements that are indicated in Section 3, which include looking at the history of such property, looking at the investment that the state might have made, as well as looking at the current use of such as property, including market value. We know that in the contestation in this debate, there has been more of a preference that market value should be the only determining factor for determining compensation when expropriation is being made. And we're saying if one takes the Constitution, Section 25(3), actually market value is there, but it is not the only determinant that the state will have to use for expropriation, and we've therefore been guided more by what is provided in our Constitution on Section 25(3). We're also saying as we undertake this determination of compensation, we also need to look at the improvements done in order to secure what will be just and equitable also for the affected party, as well as look at whether there's anything that is done with the object of increasing value of the property in order to gain therefore. So one of the issues we'd have to look at carefully is once a notice is served, is there no, uncalled for behavior of wanting to increase the property value after a notice has been served. So those are the issues that we'll have to be mindful of. But we're also acknowledging that if there are justifiable improvements that had been done on the property before a notice of expropriation has been given, those will have to be taken into consideration. And that where interest is due, particularly when during the process of that compensation it is required, that will also be paid on the compensation money or the award when it's received. We are also saying in Section 17 of the Act, a person who receives notice of expropriation may serve a notice to claim compensation. Maybe the person may not be interested in arguing with the state, but will immediately serve the state with a notice to claim compensation and might have indicated through his or her own valuers what he or she thinks his property is valued. And we're saying where such notice from an affected party is served on the state on the claim for compensation, it must contain relevant explanations on how an individual has arrived to this claim. It must therefore indicate to us what he or she took into consideration to arrive at the amount of the claim of compensation. We're also saying the authority may deliver a statement of explaining whether the amount indicated will be paid, and if not, the reasons thereof. So also the state has an obligation to indicate if they don't agree with the proposed amount from the person who is claiming compensation, to say if they don't agree with the proposed amount, these are the reasons around which as a state we do not agree with your proposed determination. We also allow in Section 15 the parties to negotiate on the amount, and that, as I said earlier, they can request particulars from each other. Where there is no agreement, the expropriation authority must issue a final determination on the amount, which will actually be within the executive function of the expropriating authority. While saying the amount that is due and payable on the date of the agreement of the or the date determined by the expropriating authority, it's why it will guide us in the payment of compensation. So the parties will have to agree when the amount will be payable and therefore the other party when to expect. And also we're saying payments will be made to the owner, but also acknowledging that sometimes there may not be owner that can be found in within the reasonable time, and that that amount will be paid to the master where the owner cannot be identified, such as absentee landlords. We're also saying, while we acknowledge the payment to the owner, there may be instances where property is mortgaged and therefore there is a third party. And that where a mortgaged property is concerned, compensation may not be paid out necessarily to the owner without agreement between buyer, mortgagee, and the claimant. We're also saying where there is absence of an agreement between these parties, any party may approach the court for an order determining the rights of each party on whom such compensation will be due. As I said earlier, that one of the reasons to serve the notice on municipalities, apart from informing them and also dealing with issues of town planning, we're also looking at issues where they may be rates owed. We say on receipt of the notice to expropriate, the municipality must inform the expropriating authority of any rates which are outstanding in respect of a property. We're also saying an expropriating authority will be responsible to pay the rates, deducting from the compensation money, that is true, if the owner has not settled those. If the municipality fails to inform the expropriating authority of the rates, the owner will have to continue being liable for the rates. This Section 23 deals with where monies can be deposited, particularly when, as I said, we do not find the owner concerned who will be expropriated. We're saying this money will be paid to the master, as I said earlier, where we can't find this individual, but also if the court orders us that this money must be paid to the master. As I said earlier, that on the issues of mortgage, there may be disputes among parties. Maybe in that instance, when they go to the court might say this money must be paid to the master, while some of those dispute mechanisms are being found among the parties. The expropriating authority will not be liable where money is paid to the master. So once the money moves out of the hands of the state to the master will then take full responsibility of securing those resources on behalf of those to whom it must be paid. We're saying there may be instances where there is a dispute between the expropriating authority and the person who is expropriated, and there may not be agreement, even where the minister might have decided on the compensation, there might still be a dispute, and while saying therefore, our constitutional democracy allows for people to appeal to the courts. However, saying where there is no agreement, a court will have to undertake a review proceeding to look at whether all the steps in relation to the executive actions did follow the legislation, and therefore use, we are saying, one of the tests that the court will be able to use is set out in PAJA, one of our legislation that deals with the administration of justice action. In other words, the review of the minister's decision will be process-driven and not necessarily amount to a reconsideration of the decision or on the merits. And we therefore say where a court finds that such administrative action were not taken, it would actually revert to the executive authority to indicate that on this basis they think maybe this process must be undertaken once more. As I said earlier, that there may be instances where a withdrawal of compensation may have to be done, that if it's in the public interest that such compensation has to be withdrawn, the minister will actually be empowered by the Act to do so. Lastly, we're saying, having provided for these procedures for expropriation which will govern a number of expropriating authorities that have got powers to do so, as I've said, through the Municipal Structures Act, some of them, and through some of the bylaws, that we will repeal the Expropriation Act of 1975, including the amendments that have been made thereof, as well as the Land Affairs Act of 1987, including its amendments. As you know, that the Land Affairs Act of 1987 provides for the land board, which would now actually be repealed and be replaced by the proposed advisory board to assist government in this expropriation process. We're therefore tabling to you this legislation, and we hope after our formal tabling to you, which is the first introduction, Chairperson, you will then, as you have indicated on your framework, engage with the legislation. This is not the last time, as Honourable Blanchard said, it's the first time. I know it's the first time of having waited patiently for this legislation. Now, we believe is the time for engagement. Obviously, we'll still come back as government, go through line by line with you after you've undertaken your processes. And the state law advisor will be with us, as well as the parliamentary legal section will continue to be with us during this process. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. This is the expropriation bill as proposed by the department. I therefore allow for clarity seeking questions from members. And I beg for your indulgence, members. I know there's always a temptation to want to engage on issues contained in this piece of legislation, but I know it will not be relevant for us to start the discussions at this juncture, as we are still going to allow other stakeholders to make their own input. So let me allow, there are many issues that I have noted, I hope you did. When we come to the discussions, we'll engage with those issues. But let me allow you to have an opportunity to ask clarifying questions and to have your comments. Thank you very much. Any indication? Honorable Opperman, Honorable Ramuzamai, Honorable Khadebe, in that order. And welcome, Honorable Mdaka and Mumalo.
Chairperson, on the issue of withdrawal of compensation. On the issue of withdrawal of compensation, do we have specific, or will the minister have specific guidelines that will help her to take that decision, and what are those guidelines? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I hope the minister and the department will understand some of us have not been to those briefings, so the kind of questions perhaps might not look important, but I think for us to be able to be part of this, we'll have to ask all those questions of clarity. Perhaps my first question would be, if the minister can explain, we've had legislation before that deals with land, that's right, and perhaps what led us to consider this one? What led the department to think that we need this legislation? Whereas over the past couple of years dealing with that, what led us to actually having to consider this thing? The second question is, if it can explain to me what are unregistered rights, and perhaps I'll have my understanding here, if I'm right, is that we're talking about perhaps farm workers, if I'm right, I don't know. But then if I'm right that we mean by farm workers, how are we going to make the ordinary farm workers understand the legalistic language? Because ordinary workers will be served with notices just like all other learned people. If I'm correct, how are we going to make sure that those ordinary farm workers understand what that document says and that they are responding within specified time? The other question, perhaps, maybe I'll leave the others for the other, is what process will be followed before expropriating? If perhaps we could be told what process that would be followed before we do that. Chair, I do have other questions, but I want to come back. Okay, fine. The other question is, how long, we're talking about the claims for compensation, how long will the process of negotiating take before we take a decision, avoiding situation where there will be purposeful delays
is there a specific time after the process has been taken that there's going to be negotiating? Because you can negotiate forever. So is there a specific time that you say, after following this, that actually will happen? Because we need to be, if we want to implement this, if eventually we implement it, we need to be following, but that there should be time frames for that. The other question would be, I mean, is that, you know, when it comes into even ordinary people, when they sell their properties, rates are first paid even before that. Now, my question is, the minister was saying, if the owner is, I mean, if the municipality does not respond, it will mean even eventually the payment of the rates will be from the owner. My question is, I think we need to do it very strictly. That any money that is, I mean, owing, rate first and then the owner. I think that should come in, because once you say if the municipality does not respond, they may not be paid, whereas presently, even ordinary poor people, when they sell their houses, rates are paid first. I think that needs to be put in a frame where there's no negotiation, that rates first and then the owner, and not be actually loose as perhaps as it is now. I'll end there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khandebe. You are looking for Honorable Mimano.
All right, thank you, Madam Chairperson. And then we'd also like to thank the Minister for the briefing she has given us this morning. I think it clarifies where we are coming from and where we are going to. Also appreciate the Department, because it was one of their objectives in the last budget vote, but before the end of the financial year, they'll present this bill. So it must highly be appreciated that they were able to meet the target, although almost just a week before the part of the financial year. But it must be appreciated. So, but I've got a few questions here, about three questions in particular. I'll go back to the slide, the very first slide. Ne? I can see that a workshop was held, and then from this workshop, there were various stakeholders which were called in to come and present. I see that under the second last bullet in the background, you see that there are farmers' associations which participated. But at the same time, I see that there's Agri South Africa, which is also highlighted. Is Agri South Africa not a farmers association? Is it having more weight than other farmers so that it can be mentioned on its own? What about NAFU? Why was it not mentioned? Because this thing will give an impression as if Agri South Africa will have more say than the other agricultural unions. If that one can be clarified. And then the issue of the unregistered rights. Yes, I appreciate the minister when she actually referred to ISTA and LTA, the rights which are preserved by those acts. Né? But what is going to happen to the situation whereby when the executive authority is expropriating, the farmer does not want the farm to be expropriated, and then it makes a lot of people to invade the land so that they can also have unregistered rights. Is there a process of verifying who are those unregistered rights to get upon so that you cannot have these delays? And then the third one will be the issue of the advisory board versus the Department of Public Works. I see the minister said that the Department of Public Works should keep a register of all the intended expropriations, the expropriations and the withdrawals. What is going to be the function of the board? What is going to be the weight of the report of the board? Let's say if there's a dispute, it goes to court, to go to court. Will the court be influenced by the report of the board? If the court is not influenced by that, will that not lead to further delay when coming to, because the time is of essence here. We are 14 years down the democracy line. We know very well that it is very difficult. The land reform process is very difficult. So if it is put extra structures in the process, are we not going to delay it further? Because I think that if the Department of Public Works is going to be empowered to make all the registers and all the, and initiate this approval, why put another structure on top of what we are already having? Thank you, Chairperson. I'll come later.
Before I allow honorable members, I know this is a very interesting. I know that. Very interesting. But we are already discussing the bill. we're already talking about what is the role of God, what is unresisted size, what is... We'll come to that point. We'll come to a point where we'll have our pastors and we'll ask them, what is this? What do you mean by this? And they will go to town. The minister has laid down the framework that this is the object of the bee. What, this is what the bee intends to achieve. It will be upon yourself whether you agree or disagree with that, and whether there's legal ambiguity or jargon that you prepare and all that, and get more definitions of the words that has been used in the bill. We'll come to that point. The issue is here the bill and its object. Are you having fundamental differences with those objects, which is a framework of what informs the... Actually, it's calling for the repeal of a particular legislation. You didn't even speak to that, but this is the bill here. So let's take an opportunity to go and say, because Honorable Ramaswamy asked a very important question, which I noted here, that how will ordinary people understand this thing? The affected parties, like your unrestricted rights. It's actually a question that we must ask ourselves, that when we leave here, what is it that we're going to do with this bill to make that affected parties understand the implications of this bill upon themselves, whether it's your beneficiaries or it's any other person. It's us who must make sure that this bill is known and set and people make input, and after we have finalized it, we make sure that the department publicizes it to ordinary citizens. I think that will be the responsibility. But I'm trying to say, let's not open up a debate, because we will not be in a position to sustain a debate when we did not go line by line through the bill and understand, because you still need to look even at the principal bill actually, and look at the amendments that were made, and look at the new bill as it stands, and make comparisons, having listened to the framework that has been tabled today by the minister. I think that's a fact. But let me give Honorable Romano an opportunity also to hear this.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thank the department and the minister for bringing in this bill, which we have been waiting for a long time. But I've got a clarity question. The property to be expropriated, how big is this property, or you talking of zoned crawl, or bigger properties, farms, or that size? Because I know in the rural areas, the Makaya, these they can cause the wars among the tribes. Will these get into there, or if you understand what I mean? Thank you.
Well, Honorable Member, I don't know whether the minister is having a register of intended properties to be expropriated and all that. I think it will even be benefit. I'm not sure, because it will be a long register of, even some of them is just a street, you know, affected where they were, the road. But, well, I will allow the minister to respond.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you said, our understanding was that this was the introduction of the legislation to the legislatures, and therefore that it was not yet the full debate which we will still come to. I know other honorable members are really now wanting to get into the discussion of this bill itself. But I'm sure we'll be able to do that later. The issue raised by Honorable Opperman with regard to withdrawal, will there be guidelines? Indeed, there will be guidelines. But as we have said, the overarching guideline is that will look at whether the act that will be undertaken is in the public interest, and does it deal with issues of public purpose. But we can highlight that detail when we come in terms of the guidelines that will be undertaken for withdrawal of the compensation. Honorable Ramaswamy asked what led to the department considering the latest lesson. As we have said, that in looking at the latest lesson, clearly it was inconsistent with the current latest lesson. If you would remember, Honorable Mzamai, one of the things that as government or even as negotiating parties during the Constituent Assembly, we acknowledge that there was uneven balance in terms of ownership rights to land and property, as well as access, equitable access to natural resources in the country. That's why if you look at our property clause in Section 25, it deals with the protections of right to property, but it also allows for limitation for public interest, one of which is land reform, where the state will have to actually use the mechanism of expropriating in order to satisfy issues of equitable access to South Africa's resources, one of which being land, and that is why government took the decision following the constitution to embark on land reform. You'd recall that one of the issues that has been experienced as a challenge in one of our land-related legislation was that where there are challenges, the state does not have enough instrument to actually satisfy the public interest as is defined in our constitution, because the current legislation dealt with only the public purpose. That's why the Land Affairs Department came to this parliament through its portfolio committee to ask for the inclusion of powers of expropriation in the Restitution Act of 1995 as amended. And therefore, we looked at dealing with those issues of constitutionality, but also of facilitating equitable access to natural resources, land being one. So that is the basis around which we, as the department who is responsible for this legislation, had to come to Parliament for amendment. Question has been raised, what are unregistered rights? You know, I'll first take you back in 1994. One of the realities that as a country we had a dual system of ownership or tenure security, where you had those who had freehold title to the land, which was registered, but also you had the majority of people, even those who were in the townships for a long time, they only had a secure tenure, but which was a 1990 lease, not a full title. You had communities in rural areas who were actually resident into their land but had no ownership rights. The state was a trustee. Until we had to deal with that reality, one of the legislation is still in court at the moment, the Communal Land Rights Act was actually to deal with the issue of tenure security of people living in traditional land because they had no ownership rights into that land. You'd recall that between 94 and 1999, one of the legislation that was put into place was IPILRA, which was the Informal Protection of Land Rights Act, to ensure that those rights which are informal, because people have been staying there for a long time, but without any protection, must be protected. Further, during that period, we took into consideration the challenges of people living on farms who have lived there for many years, but never had the right to that land. They could be evicted without any alternative accommodation, and that's why the extension of Security of Tenure Act was actually put in place to protect those rights of those individuals, even within those properties, including the Labor Tenant Act. So those rights are protected by the state, but those rights are not registered. So Mazondi is staying in a property of Fanikek, who has ERF number 217 registered in the deeds register. While the law accommodates Mazondi in terms of acknowledging her rights, but is not registered in the 217F of Mr. Fanikek. So it is those people who are saying their rights are unregistered. but they are there in those properties. And when you take an expropriation act, they will be affected. And we are saying as a state, those people must also be compensated for the rights lost. So that's the definition of the unregistered rights that we're talking about in this act. The question you raised also was, what process would be followed before expropriating? As we've said in one of the slides in the beginning, is that before any expropriation is undertaken, investigation will have to be undertaken on that property. And this is where the minister would use the advisory board to undertake that task and come back to the minister. And one of those investigations that will be done will be looking at the history of the property which will be investigated, its current use, whether there are unregistered right holders in that property beyond the owner, and what the nature of their rights are, as well as the value, what improvements have been done on that property, and whether or not it would make sense for expropriating by the state. So those will be first before you even contemplate expropriating, those investigations. And thereafter, we're saying notices will have to be served for expropriation, which outline even the compensation that the state would like to pay, and that that notice would not only be served on the owner, but also on the on those holders of unregistered rights, as well as the municipality and the deeds register. Indeed, you are raising the issue, which is important, the issue of language. And as you know, that even our own constitution says our legislation must actually, you know, be interpreted in other languages, as we know that all 11 official languages in this country are equal. And therefore, it will be incumbent upon us to ensure that, firstly, as these legislators, as you do your public hearing, you have to, I can't dictate what you must do, but you must make it possible to ensure that you reach out even to those communities who will be affected in the language of their own. But also as an implementing agency, it would be important that when such a notice is served, with the information already that you would have received on the investigation report, it must be served in the language of those people who are in that property, including those who are holders of unregistered rights. So in my view, that will deal with the issues of language and information. But as I say, that one of the responsibilities is for all of us as lawmakers, as we do with other legislation, to ensure that people do have a knowledge and understanding of the statutes that would affect them. How long will negotiations take? You will see in the legislation that we have indicated timelines, both in terms of the notices and the timelines that will guide the minister to take a decision. So it is time-bound, without getting into detail, but those are provided for in the legislation. The issue raised by Honorable Khadebe about why we mentioned others and not others. Honorable Khadebe, there was no order of preference, really. We were just making an example of people who participated. NAFU did participate. They even gave us a written submission. So they were part. You would know that other farmers' organizations call themselves associations, others unions. So that's why you have got farmers' associations, and then we mentioned some. But as I say, that it had no order of preference to say NAFU or AgriSA is more important than the other. It was just the mere example that we used. The issue of do we require a board, or should we rely on the department to advise the minister with regard to expropriating processes? Our own view was there is merit in having an advisory board. It is an advisory board. It's nothing beyond that. So its role is to advise the minister. And therefore, the issues of waiting, in my view, don't arise. The minister will have to consider the advice so given. It does not reduce the advice of the department. Department have to always advise the minister. So the department will continue to advise the minister. the minister indeed would look at the department advice as well as the advice of the advisory board and take the appropriate decision. There's been an issue that has been raised by Honorable Nxumalo about the properties to be expropriated. I think it would be premature because one would not know as we sit here which property will be expropriated, which one will be not, what size, where it will be. I don't think the minister can be empowered sitting here to say what property are you going to expropriate tomorrow unless there has been an application for expropriation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for your response. I don't know whether there is any further Honorable Blanchet and Honorable Opperman.
Chairperson, I see in the poll.
I thought I said Honorable Blanchet, but I don't know. Maybe you are the same person.
Yes.
Can I just check in the document, this document is with the heading is withdrawal of compensation, and in the bill it's withdrawal of expropriation. So there's it is wrong. That's why I asked the question.
Apologies. I think you are right. Certain with the withdrawal of expropriation, that's what we deal with. That and I think we'd have to correct the slide because even in the beginning, that's the power where we say the minister cannot delegate to anybody the power of withdrawing an expropriation act, in notice rather.
Madam Chair, can I ask the question whether the bill has been explained to other portfolio committees like the Agricultural Constitutional Portfolio Committee and maybe the Justice Committee, or do we have to deal with that on our own? And then I've got another question on the policy. The minister referred to the policy document. Can that be included in our documentation so that we also know what is in the policy document? Because we haven't seen that, and that apparently has been advertised as well. I would just like to know some technical details, and that is, if a property is advertised as being up for expropriation, will that property be described as far as the geographical coordinates are concerned, or do we still have, and I've seen this in some of the municipal expropriations, that there are purely beacons, but the most technical, modern technical way of doing it is to use the geographical coordinates of degrees, minutes, and seconds. Then you know where on earth that beacon is supposed to be. Yes, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Well, Minister, I envy you on that one.
Well, firstly, I must say that we have worked with colleagues, as you see, Deputy Minister Jack Dutoit this year has been working with the Department of Land Affairs. As you know, that they will be one of the people who will be the beneficiaries of this legislation. And we hope that working with them and yourselves, a presentation will be made or may be made. But I cannot make the judgment as the Minister of Public Works to insist to present to another portfolio committee. That would have to be done in consultation with the Minister of Land Affairs. Similarly with the Minister of Justice, Transport, Public Enterprise and Housing, because those are some of the departments that would be affected by this legislation. And I think in discussion with those colleagues as well as with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, we'll find the best way in which they can be engaged in this debate. So that's the answer to the first question. Second question as to which you said indeed is technical. I don't think in the bill as it stands now, we're dealing with the technicalities of how that information will be utilized, whether we would use the existing model or whether we would use the GIS, as you say. And I think that would be issues that would have to reflect on issues of implementation, what would be the best mechanism be. But in terms of the bill, that detail is not included. Thank you. Lastly, the policy document, yes, we would make that available through the chairperson.
Well, I thought, Minister, even the bill itself is so self-explanatory. So if you look at the content, it even talk about investigation. So it also gives the policy framework as to how will the exploitation go about. But I think for the sake of more information, I think that will be appreciated. Honourable members, I suspect we'll come to the end of the presentation. Unless if there's a fundamental issue that you believe the minister is omitting, then we can open up for further discussion. I think I should also indicate that I have invited the Portfolio Committee on Land Affairs, so I'm not aware why they are not here. Maybe that's why you see the Deputy Minister attending, because I wanted us to have an all-round discussion on this matter. But I can assure you that when we started the discussions, we will also invite the Portfolio Committee on Housing, on Transport, and Land Affairs again. Without any further ado, I would like to thank the Minister for making time and making the presentation to ourselves. It was a precise, concise, and very clear presentation. I urge members to go and study the bill line by line. And I also urge members, as of when we implement the framework, when we do public hearings, to make sure that our constituencies attend, especially the affected parties, attend those public hearings, because it will be very important for the people who are affected to be part and parcel of this. And I'm also urging any other person who are here, well, they've left, to give a correct version of the discussion. Hopefully, they're gone. And I'm told that lunch has been arranged in Mess Building. I think it's a dining hall, I presuppose. What time is it? Time for lunch, is it? Is that not 11:30? Yeah. That's very early. 30 minutes. Okay, maybe. Is it 12 o'clock? What time is lunch?
It's 1 o'clock.
Huh?
It's 1
o'clock. It's 1 o'clock. Yeah, but why do we still have it? Yeah? So I will request as the minister is living with her entourage, members stay behind just for a small briefing, please. So everybody else who's not a full member of the study group, but just of the portfolio committee, may you kindly leave the portfolio committee. Thank you.